In a world that appears to be filled with negativity and distrust, it's easy to feel helpless and frustrated. Well, how about a change? How about a podcast that brings positivity to your day with stories about everyday people doing good things for people around them? You found it here. This is the Harmony Goal Podcast with Tom Durth, focused on making the world a more harmonious and caring place. We hope you enjoy it.
Welcome to another episode of the Harmony Goal Podcast. And once again, our podcast is designed for talking to people and giving a platform to folks who are making a difference in the world today in a positive way, helping to create more harmony by making the world a better place for everyone. That is our primary goal. And today we definitely get to continue on with that because our guest today is Penn Street. Penn is married with two children, three grandchildren. She is the developer, and I'll let her correct me in a little while. And the outreach for the Audio Information Network of Colorado. One of the interesting things about Penn is Penn lost her sight at age 9. And is now a successful, sought-after speaker to talk about how to deal with and how to communicate with people who are sight impaired. So, Penn, welcome, and correct anything I just said.
Thank you so much, Tom, for inviting me. This is exciting. Yes, I work for Audio Information Network of Colorado. And yes, that's a mouthful. So the acronym is AINC, and I'm the Development and Outreach Director for them. So, and it's an amazing opportunity to get to work with people who are blind and visually impaired in our communities.
Well, you said that so much better than I did. Thank you. I appreciate that.
I've had more practice.
Absolutely. I love it. So tell us, you know, one of the reasons we're here is we're going to be talking about a sight impaired and blindness. And so tell us a little bit about how did this happen at age 9? What occurred for you there?
Sure. When I was 9, I was bitten by a Western Diamondback rattlesnake. And so rattlesnakes are probably not at the top of my list for animals. But so I was bitten twice. And actually, my little sister was bitten once after me. Luckily, I took the bulk of the venom because I was, you know, almost 3 years older than her. And she did get sick, but within a week or so, she really was, nobody would have ever have known. However, with me, because I did take the bulk of the venom, and it was a young rattlesnake, which I did not know this until an adulthood, that young rattlesnakes, their venom is more potent than the older snakes, which was an interesting fact. But what it did is I became ill quite quickly. And the doctors, to save my life, gave me a list of medications and also, of course, anti-venom. They don't know which one or if it was a combination, but it triggered what's called Stevens-Johnson syndrome, SJS for short. And SJS, if you look it up, there's a wonderful international organization called the SJS Foundation. And if you look it up, just be aware, it is pretty, the photos are shocking because you burn alive from the inside out. All of your soft tissue is compromised. They treat you in a burn unit as if you've been in a fire, even though you haven't been in a fire, but your body is responding as if you've been in a fire. So 75% of my body was covered in second and third degree burns, and they did not think that I was going to make it. By the time they actually figured out what it was, you know, almost 4 or 5 days had gone by the time I ended up in Children's Hospital in Little Rock, Arkansas. And I remember being awake. They thought I was not awake, or I don't think they would have said it in front of me, but they told my parents that if I made it through the night, it was not because of what the doctors were doing. They had done everything for me. And so my parents, you know, they took turns in my room. They set up a phone for my parents by my bedside, and they just started calling everybody they knew to start praying, because that was what was going to get me through this. And they did. Prayers went up all over the world, and it worked. I'm still here today. When they finally brought me out of the drug-induced coma, they told my parents that I would be totally blind, totally deaf. I would probably have brain damage because I had such a high fever for such a long time. And then also all of my organs were compromised. And so they didn't think that I would ever be able to breathe on my own, and definitely not be able to eat on my own. So when I came to, my father was holding up this stuffed monkey in front of me, which I couldn't see, but it was something, it was my mother's best friend had given it to me, you know, so kind of as a gift in the hospital. It was the only one that was allowed in my ICU room. And so my dad was holding the monkey up in front of me, and he kept telling me, you know, I remember hearing him, you know, it's time to wake up. It's time to wake up. And I did, and it hurt. I mean, the first thing that I realized that I was in a lot of pain, especially with my eyes, but I did manage to get my eyes open. And the first word I said was fuzzy, because everything was fuzzy, but they took it as I was saw the monkey, and I named it Fuzzy, which it was Fuzzy. Mm-hmm. I still have Fuzzy to this day, but it was a miracle, because just that one word let them know that I could think on my own, and I could speak, and I could see, and I could hear. It did take me, I was able to get off the respirator, but it did take me a long time to be able to eat on my own without the feeding tube, because my mouth and, you know, my whole digestive system was so raw from the onset of SJS. But it did compromise my eyes from that day forth. I've had over 30 eye surgeries trying to save the vision I have, and or just reconstructing my eyelids, because my eyelids had blisters on them, just like as if you'd been in a fire. So I've had reconstruction on my eyelids many, many, many times, too many times to count. So, but I survived. I was a tomboy. I am the 9th of 10 children. I have 7 older brothers. So I had to have that tomboy spirit, or I never would have survived that. And even in the recovery process and, you know, getting home and all of that, really was, I was just a very determined little girl, and really tried not to let anything stand in my way I was never, ever going to be the same little girl before that snake bite, just because my health was so compromised. And a lot of people in my life treated me like, you know, this super fragile China doll. While others, like some of my brothers, and then definitely my little sister, they treated me the same. My father was better about treating me like that old, like the little girl was, you know, before, but my mother, it was harder on her, and she definitely would have put me in a bubble and kept me there if we'd have all let her, because it did, you know, she was in the hospital the majority of the time, and she saw what I went through, you know, because my dad did eventually have to go back to work. So she, and I was in the hospital for months and months and months. So I can't imagine as a mom experiencing that. But yeah, I survived, and I continue to survive. My heart and lungs are not fantastic on any level. But again, I don't let that stop me, because I'm going to hurt and not feel good if I sit on the couch, I might as well, you know, get out. And I love to climb mountains. I love to ski. You know, I've rafted the entire Grand Canyon, and yes, it hurts. but again, I'd rather be hurting and doing something outside and, you know, doing something beautiful than sitting on the couch. So,
Well, that's amazing. Here you are in all this pain and you're concerned about your mother and father and their feelings about the whole thing.
Oh, absolutely.
That is just amazing. What are the kind of obstacles did you have to overcome that we just take for granted, you know, in your home and your work and, you know, your school and that sort of thing? What were some of the things that were unique to you that weren't to the other kids, if you will?
Oh, absolutely. You know, kids can be cruel. So when I finally was able to go back to school, they held me back a grade. And it wasn't because school came easy to me. It always did. And so I had I tested well, so they could have put me and kept me going with my schoolmates, but emotionally, because I had just gone through this trauma, they held me back a grade, which is okay. You can't go back and rewrite history, but that was a struggle, you know, being the oldest kid in your class. And then when I went to a school in Arkansas that was a charter school, but they still believed in, you know, paddling at that time. And I never got paddled. Some of my older brothers did, but I never got paddled. But I came back to school and there was no teasing or harassing or anything like that. But I was the only kid in my entire school, not just my grade, but my entire school, that had a disability. And so during that time, they really treated me pretty normal, but like at recess, for instance, they wanted me to kind of sit on the sidelines. Like my teachers would give me things to do inside because my skin was still very raw. Mm. So I was isolated and put on the sidelines in the beginning, but then my family moved to Colorado because Children's Hospital in Denver, which it still is one of the leading places for children that have any sort of condition or illness. And so we moved to Colorado so that my parents could be close to that hospital. And I was in shock when I got to Colorado. And I remember the first day, kids teased me because I didn't look, my eyes didn't look like them. My skin was still raw. And, you know, the light really hurt my eyes. So I wore sunglasses, which at that time was not cool and hip like it is now. All little kids wear sunglasses now because we know the damage that sun can have on children's mm-hmm. eyes. But back then, you know, and I wore a baseball hat to try to keep down the glare. So just getting teased for that first time was devastating. And so I definitely had to overcome that bullying aspect. But also a good thing is when I did, you know, in Colorado, they had low vision teachers, and Nancy Foster was her name. She's passed away now, but she was really tough love. You know, she said, you know, you need to learn these skills. You need to learn Braille. You need to learn how to use a cane. And I did not want to because I was already looked different, right? And I acted different, and I didn't want to be even more different. However, the one thing that Nancy did is she introduced me to other blind kids, and she would gather us up and take us bowling and horseback riding and things like that.
Oh, beautiful.
And that, yeah. And that really, really helped. But as I grew up, I learned skills, you know, I learned Braille, I learned, you know, and then as technology changed and everything has become audible, that was wonderful. And so, yeah, transportation is probably, as an adult, my biggest barrier, because, you know, I can't just go out, get in the car and go where I need to go. So I rely on drivers. I rely on my own 2 feet. I rely on my guide dog to get me from point A to point B. I take public transportation, but I also spend a lot. I should have bought stock in Lyft and Uber because I spend a lot of money on Lyft and Uber. But yeah, and I always, whenever I find something, an accessible version of what is out there, I always try to share it with other people. You know, because that's how we learn, you know, sort of these new tricks of making sure that our lives are accessible and that we can be the best people we want to be.
Well, you know, you talk about sharing your ideas and thoughts and what's going on there. As you are being asked to be a speaker for businesses today, what are some of the things that they want you to talk about, or you know full well they need to know? Because once again, our whole focus here is creating harmony. And if somebody's going into the work environment, we want to make sure that people know how to deal with a sight impaired type person. So
absolutely. The first thing I want to say is any business or organization that hires somebody with a disability, we are an asset to your company or organization. We shouldn't be looked at as, oh, you know, this is a charity case, or, oh my gosh, how much is this going to cost me? You should really, really think of us as an asset. For one, people who are blind and visually impaired, and it's a fact, you can look it up, we are the most educated sect in the United States of America. And the reason is because we stay in school, you know, and we will work for free. We volunteer. And the reason for that is because the unemployment rate for people who are blind and visually impaired is still in the high 70%. Or we're also underemployed. So we might finally get that job, but we are constantly looked over for promotions. And it's because there's just so much misunderstanding around what we do, how we function. And so this is a huge topic, Tom. I actually spoke on a panel last week about accessibility in the workplace. So one of the things is I have to be innovated. I have to be somebody who knows how to get from point A to point B. I'm a problem solver. I'm also a much better communicator than somebody without a disability. Because if you grow up and you have a disability, you have to use those skills on a day-to-day basis, or else you won't survive. You are going to be that person that ends up, you know, on the couch and that's unemployed. Because you're dealing with so much. So for instance, it's a fact that people with disabilities take way less sick days than people without a disability. And the reason is because we know what pain is. We know what it feels like not to feel 100% of the time. So it takes a lot to keep us home being sick, because we don't feel good most of the time. That's kind of our normal baseline, where somebody without a disability is like, oh, you know, I have a headache, or, you know, I sprained my ankle, or whatever it is. And they'll call in sick. Me, I recently dislocated my shoulder, and that's nothing compared to what goes on in my body day to day. So I did not take a sick day. I went and got the x-ray after work. You know, they reset it the next morning before work, and I just put it in, you know, they put it in a sling, and I was at work on time the next day. Wow. And and also just problem solving. We, on a day-to-day basis, just to function, we have to approach each situation, regardless if it's with our family, our work, our community. We have to figure out all the different ways of doing something. And we always have plan A, and then we have plan B and plan C. Because when you have a disability, you just don't know what's going to work and not work. So we're always prepared to shift, you know, into a different lane if we need to. And that's just because we have to have those skills, or we wouldn't survive out there. So there's also things, there's a lot of tax breaks for companies and organizations. If they hire somebody with a disability, they can get special grants if we need special equipment. There's so many resources and services out there to hire somebody with a disability. And like I said, we are an asset. We are not a detriment to you. We will, you know, usually be the first ones there in the morning and the last one to leave at night, because we know how hard it is to get that job in the first place. And we want to make sure that we keep it.
Wow, that is beautiful. That is, see, that's something that most people don't even think about. They think about just people. And then all of a sudden you don't realize the uniqueness of various people that, wow, that's fabulous.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Thank you for sharing that.
Absolutely.
You know, as a sighted person, I don't necessarily know the right protocols of dealing with someone who is sight impaired. And so, you know, somebody like me that wants to come up and I want to be helpful. I want to be, you know, what can I do for you? What are some of the do's and don'ts about approaching a blind person, a seeing impaired person? What are some of the do's and don'ts about coming up? I want to help. What do I do? What do I not do?
Absolutely. I always say, remember the golden rule, right? We're taught it in elementary school. Treat others as you want them to treat you. So, and again, we're humans, we are individuals. So what might be good for me may be different for somebody else. But if I'm in the grocery store, for instance, and I'm trying to find a certain kind of peanut butter, I'll just use that as an example. Somebody, if I'm kind of looking lost, somebody will usually come up and say, you know, can I help you? And I usually will say yes in that situation because I have a specific goal. Like I need this specific peanut butter, but it might be different. Like when I, you know, and if I'm crossing a street, That's a big deal. I need to be focused on the traffic and what's going on around me. So that is not a good time to talk to me unless I'm standing there, again, looking completely lost, which of course sometimes I am. And I use a guide dog. And so sometimes my guide dog and I will stay on the corner for a couple different of cycles of the lights so that I can make sure that we're going to cross safely. Now, if I need help, like for instance, if the traffic, if it's a corner I've never crossed, or it's really confusing to me because a lot of the curbs they're putting in now, which is great for people in wheelchairs, but the whole curb is cut. And so you can't really tell where the actual edge of the curb is before you step out onto the street. I will turn around and I'll say, hey, is there anybody here that can line me up so that when I cross, I'm going to end up on the other side of the street and not out in the middle. But to really try not to distract somebody, regardless if they're using a cane or a dog, when they're out in traffic and traveling. The big, big thing is do not touch somebody who is blind or visually impaired unless their life, you know, just like if they were sighted, you know, if they're about to step in a manhole, then yeah, maybe grab them. But other than a life, you know, threatening incident, do not touch us. I don't know if you've ever been at a party, Tom, and somebody came up behind you and tapped you on the shoulder. It's like, you know, it's startling. Mm-hmm. Well, somebody who's blind or visually impaired, it's even more startling. But come up and say, hey, I'm Tom, you know, what's your name? Or like, because I have a guide dog and he's a standard poodle, a lot of times people will say, oh, you're such a beautiful dog. But with the guide dog, make sure you talk to me and not the dog. You know, don't do that silly human thing of, oh, what a pretty dog. Oh, you're so beautiful. Aren't you happy today? and, you know, don't do that because they are dogs. They're dogs, right? Yeah. And, but going back to what your question was, is that we are people, you know, don't be afraid to say things like, oh, did you see that movie? You know, and because people will be like, oh, I shouldn't have said see. You know, there are words in our vocabulary that I use all the time. Like, you know, I say things like, oh, I read this incredible book, or I saw this amazing person, or I saw this amazing film. Because with me, even though I'm not reading print, like Tom, like you would do, I'm still reading it. Even though I might be listening to it or reading it in Braille, That's in my vocabulary. So don't be afraid to be yourself, just like you would with a sighted person. And you can always offer help. But if somebody says, you know, no, I don't need your help, don't take that personally. That means that person has it. You have to trust them that they have it, you know, have the situation under control.
And didn't you mention something also that sometimes people will talk loud?
Yes. And slower. And I'm not saying that, you know, they're like, I am actually hearing impaired. I do wear hearing aids. However, I don't need you to talk louder to me. And I definitely do not need you to talk slower. Unless you have an accent, then maybe I would say, oh, can you please, you know, talk a little bit slower. But you would do that, Tom, if you were talking to somebody with an accent. So don't take it for granted that I have multiple disabilities. If it's obvious I'm visually impaired or blind, take that as a cue, like I don't need to talk louder or slower. But I think sometimes that is just human nature. You know, when you see somebody who's different, it's part of a respect that you want to make sure that you're understood. You know, I've had people, friends who are in wheelchairs, and people talk louder and slower to them. So I think it's a universal issue that we all need to get over.
Right. Because, you know, like as a dog loving sighted person, I think of my mindset is dogs. Cool. They like to play. Why would that mindset be a danger to you?
And danger is a really good word to use in this situation, because Beethoven really has my life in his paws, right? Because his job is to do exactly what I tell him to do when I tell him to do it. Unless it's a dangerous situation, they do teach the dogs to refuse a command if it's dangerous. So using that manhole for an example, if he sees there's a manhole there and it's, you know, I'm going to fall to my death, he will refuse my command. And I need to trust him in his decision-making, because it's happened, you know, there's been a branch across the sidewalk and he stops all of a sudden and I tell him forward and he doesn't go. And after, you know, and that's not a life-threatening situation. So after about the third time, he might take one step forward and I get whacked in the head with the branch. So then of course I'm like, oh my goodness, I should have trusted you. But other than that, my guide dog, it is my tool, and he is a $50,000 tool. So that's another reason you shouldn't be touching and petting and engaging with guide dogs without permission, is they are very, very expensive and are really irreplaceable to most people. And so when you distract them, and again, they're dogs. Dogs love attention. And so if you distract him, that means that you're putting my life at risk. Wow. And also it delays me anywhere from a few minutes to maybe half an hour. Because if it's such a distraction that I know I need to cross this 6-lane, you know, intersection, I have to get him refocused. So a lot of times I'll have to backtrack, you know, for even up to a block or two blocks, turn him around and go back the way I went. The number one distraction, though, besides humans, is dogs that are not on leashes. Because there's something about a dog that's not on a leash. When they see a dog that's in harness, they're prone to attack. And I've been told it's because guide dogs don't really smell like other dogs, because we have to keep them clean and have to keep them groomed. Because if we don't, we can be denied access, and according to the Americans with Disabilities Act. So they don't smell like them. And then they have this weird harness on them. So they don't look like a regular, you know, pet dog. And so often dogs off leash are really a nightmare. I have been attacked several times. And then what happens when there's a dog racing towards us, my guide dog tries to block them. And I try to block the dog from my dog. You know, Beethoven weighs 60 pounds. It's not like a little dog where you can just scoop them up in your arms, even though I've tried that a couple of times. So it's such a terrifying experience. I mean, you can imagine it, Tom, you know, close your eyes and you hear this ferocious, vicious dog running at you. Your dog is responding. You're trying to respond. And it's such a scary, scary thing. And so many dogs, guide dogs, have been injured, or if they did get hurt, they might have to retire early, because just like humans, if we get hurt doing something, we're skittish about doing it again. Wow. So, yeah. So what happens if they've been attacked by a dog off leash? Well, every dog after that, they're going to respond to it. And again, mm-hmm. it's that focus thing. We need them focused on their job. Mm-hmm. And if they're skittish or scared, that takes away what their focus is on me.
Oh, this is wonderful information for our listeners, because if there's anybody out there like me who has never been educated in this area, I think it's really important for us to be able to do that so that you can walk through the world in harmony with everybody else.
Absolutely. So
that's important.
Absolutely.
You had mentioned at one time also that belonging to the Lions Club. What does the Lions Club do for sight impaired people?
Absolutely. So the Lions Clubs have been around for over 100 years. I want to say it's their 105th year or something like that. Mm-hmm. But they're a worldwide organization, and they're actually the largest worldwide organization. They're a nonprofit. And in 1925, Helen Keller was invited to their international conference. And at that, when she gave her speech, you know, she was the keynote, she asked the Lions to be Knights of the Blind. And the Lions made that promise to her that moving forward, they would be Knights of the Blind. And what that means, Tom, is that they would provide funding for things like white canes. Like, there actually, it was the Lions Clubs that realized the need of white canes. And it happened, it was actually a lion, and he was stopped at an intersection. And there was a veteran who was using just this stick to get across the intersection. And he kept thinking about that blind person trying to cross with this stick, and that it wasn't, who knows what kind of stick it was, right? You don't know, is that a sighted person just using it as support? Did he think he was just cool? Like, what was going on with that? And so he went back to his club, and they figured, you know, they really did some brainstorming around it. And so they came up with the white cane as we know it today. It's reflective. So even at night, if it's caught in the headlights, it's also universal. In the red strip that's at the bottom of the cane means this is a blind person that is using this cane for mobility. So it actually was the Lions that came up with the white cane as we know it is as it today. And so they also do things like they help with surgeries, they help with trainings, they help with eyeglasses. They have a huge eyeglass program. All kinds of things that they help with. They help with blind schools. They give funding so that scholarships for kids to go on to, you know, college and you know, fulfill the career that they want to. But it's an amazing organization. However, you know, through the years, Lions, they've brought on other projects like feeding the hungry, you know, environment, diabetes, which does lead to blindness. There's all in childhood cancer. So they've taken on these other levels of engagement, but me, Penn State, at every club I go to, and whenever I speak, I remind the Lions about that promise that they made to Helen Keller, and that that should be their top priority, is being Knights of the Blind. So like our club here in Colorado, we have made a promise this year, and I'm the president again, this will be the second time I've been president of my club, that we are going to be Knights of the Blind. So this year, we're really going to focus on helping people who are blind and visually impaired engage with their communities and the environment. So we're doing hikes. We're taking blind people on hikes. Even with the holiday season coming up, Tom, we're providing rides and support if somebody wants to go shopping, because that's a huge barrier for somebody who's blind and visually impaired to go shopping for the holidays. But whatever it is, our club is going to be there for the blind and visually impaired in our community in whatever aspect that they need.
Fabulous. Fabulous. That is so good. So that's a wonderful organization for all of us to support in any way we possibly can. That's great. Yeah. Well, you mentioned at the very beginning that you were involved with the Audio Information Network of Colorado.
Yes.
So tell us, what is that?
Sure. AINC, because it is a mouthful. and you can definitely go online at aincolorado.org to find out more. But we were created, this nonprofit was created over 30 years ago by a blind man named David Dawson. And David, on his own, went out and got funding and resources and connected with services to build, it was called a radio reading service. And there's not one in every single state, but most of the states in the United States. And what it is we provide audio formats or audio editions of most of the newspapers, magazines, any printed material that is really difficult for somebody who is sight impaired to access. And I'm saying sight impaired because most of our listeners are blind and visually impaired, but our organization also provides this for free to somebody who is dyslexic or has had Parkinson's or has had a stroke. No matter what the condition is, if you struggle reading print, you qualify for our program, and it's absolutely free. So what's neat is we have all the, you know, the newspapers, magazines, things like that, but we also have original podcasts that help connect blind and visually impaired people and other people with print impairments to resources and services. So we have like what we call topic of the month. And so last month, the topic was mental health. And so we did a podcast talking with the leading people in mental health that deal with people who are print impaired, because we have issues that maybe somebody who has 20/20 vision may not encounter. And then we also really researched a lot of resources and services, which we shared. And this month is advocacy. So again, we're interviewing people on the podcast about advocacy and then connecting them to resources and services. Wow. So each month we hit on a topic, and these topics came about from in January, we started a programming advisory committee because we wanted our listeners to tell us what they wanted to, what, where those gaps were, what they wanted to listen to, what resources and services they wanted us to connect them to. And so even though I'm blind and visually impaired, and yes, I have a voice in that. And then we also have Evan Starnes on our staff who's blind. And so they do get feedback from us, but we wanted to get a wider range, you know, a diverse group of people to give us feedback. And so this topic of the month came about by that. And then we also have a topic of the month called blind sight. And actually, Bill Lundgren, who is a retired psychologist out of Denver, he is actually the host of that podcast. And that is about mental health, but that will be a forever podcast. Because mm-hmm. as you know, Tom, mental health is such a critical component to our everyday lives. And if we mm-hmm. don't have good mental health and whatever that means to each of us, or access to it and the resources and services to go to, our lives, I don't care if you can see or not, will be greatly impacted and become a detriment. So that's really exciting. And then we have my podcast, which is called After Sight. And we are just about to air the 1 year anniversary of After Sight. And just like what you're doing here, Tom, I interview people who have barriers in their lives, and most of them are blind and visually impaired, but not all of them, but that have a barrier in their life that they have overcome. Or maybe not even overcome, but they figured out ways that that's not a detriment to their life. Like, yes, I'm in a wheelchair, but that does not define who I am. Or, you know, and just like you, you've had so many incredible, beautiful people on your podcast. It really is a gift to me that AINC asked me to host After Sight, because every single person I've had to interview, I shouldn't say had to, that I wanted to interview, has really created this beautiful space in my world that I didn't know was there. Wow. So yeah, and again, it's absolutely free.
Let me interrupt you right there. You say it's absolutely free.
Yes.
Somebody has to pay for this. How do you fund that? Do you take donations?
Absolutely.
How could one of our listeners, because we ask our listeners quite often to donate to make this world a better place, where would they go? Do they go to the AIN? Colorado.org?
Yes. And there's a big giant donate button on there. And we thrive by donations. We also I have an amazing grant writer, Brady, who is really great at researching grants that fit what we do. Mm-hmm. And so we also have sponsorships. So like for After Sight, we are always looking for sponsors for our podcast. And that way, you know, somebody who's a company or organization that wants to make a bigger splash, and trust me, we are less expensive than putting out a radio ad or a television ad. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. we are very targeted. You know, we're reaching those thousands upon thousands and thousands of listeners. And then also we absolutely take donations. You can even set it up that it comes out automatically every mm-hmm. month, so you don't have to think about it. But yes, go to aincolorado.org. We also do really fun fundraisers. Once a year, we have a hike where we take blind and visually impaired people hiking. And that team is actually called our Audio Trekker team. It took us a while to come up with that name, but it is very fitting. So we do a hike with them once a year, and we also do a ski trip with them once a year. And we have people who sponsor those hikers and sponsor the event. But we also have some really awesome ideas of some new fundraising ideas. Like I have Music in the Dark, which is where we're going to be putting on a concert, and we won't demand it. It'll be your choice, but we would really like everybody to put on shades that will completely block out the light and experience the concert just like somebody who's blind or visually impaired.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Sign me up. Oh, you're at the top of the list, Tom. So
I'm loving it.
Yeah. Because we would like people who donate, not just donate for the sake of donating. We would really like you to learn about what we do and the people that we serve. That's what our goal is.
And that's the whole idea of this podcast, is the harmony and making life better for everyone involved.
Absolutely.
That is wonderful. Well, I'm looking at my clock here, and I feel terrible that we have to probably close this down. But what final, you have shared so many ideas for those of us who, and I have to put this word on myself, ignorant, because that's not really a bad word. It's I've been ignorant of how to communicate well with people who are sight impaired. And you've shared so many wonderful tips with us. And I'm sure that if people can go to your podcast and listen to that, it's After Sight, correct?
Yes. After Sight.
And go there and listen to some of your messages. I'm sure you're sharing even more information there with the folks. What final comment would you like to make to our audience today?
I would like to tell people to, no matter what you're dealing with in your life, you know, it doesn't matter if it's something physical, mental, spiritually, you're not alone. Somebody else, and probably guarantee there's a lot of people out there that are also going through that struggle. Reach out and reach out to those communities, because it's good for you, but it's also then you become part of that community and you also become important to that community. You talk about harmony, Tom, and we are all responsible for that. And we can all be part of that. And it's not just harmony with yourself, it's creating harmony with the other communities around you. So you are not alone. You're not alone. I promise you, whatever it is you're going through, that, and you can share that. When you share that struggle with others, I guarantee you that it makes their lives better as well as your own.
Oh, wow. I have goosebumps right now. That is beautiful. That's a beautiful comment. Thank you so, so much.
Absolutely.
Appreciate that. You are a delight. I'm glad you were able to come down and spend some time with us today. And I know our audience is going to absolutely fall in love with you. So they're going to be jealous of your husband, I'm sure.
Well, thank you, Tom, for what you're doing, because you're doing exactly what your goal is to create harmony in this world. And by doing this podcast, that's exactly what you're doing on a big, big scale. So thank you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. And for our listeners, please come back next week and hear another message about how people are actually making a wonderful change in the world for the better. Go to our website, which is theharmonygoal.com, and leave us a message. And you can subscribe, and we'll keep you informed as to what we're doing around these parts of the world. So thank you once again. We really appreciate you, Penn. And I know you're making a wonderful change in the world right now. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
And we'll be talking to all the rest of you next week. Tune in.
Thank you so much for listening to the Harmony Goal Podcast. To learn more ways in which people are creating harmony in the world, simply subscribe to this podcast. See our mission at theharmonygoal.com. And remember, we are all empowered to create more harmony in the world, one smile at a time.